For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
What a weekend at Busch Stadium. I was at the game on Saturday, but man, great pregame on Sunday. The last home regular season game for Albert Pujols and Yadier Molina. That means a lot to St. Louis. We're not talking just baseball. That means a lot to St. Louis. So we got a chance to kind of reflect on that here in just a little bit. I'm Mike Ferguson. Thank you for making News Talk STL part of your morning and part of your week. We had a really interesting conversation. Something interesting happening on just off the eastern seaboard of the United States has to do with environmental activists and also animal rights activists. What happens when they collide? Oh, it's kind of delicious. Here's what we learned. What happens when there is a conflict between renewable energy, green energy, and you've got endangered species? That's actually happening just off the shores of the United States right now. And there's now, you know, lawsuit filed over it, because what's going to take precedent? Interesting question. We're joined now by James Taylor, who is with the Heartland Institute. And James, first of all, appreciate you being on the show. I think it's the first time you've been on News Talk STL. So glad to have you with us. So lay the foundation here. What's the conflict that's now getting and going to sort of that lawsuit phase?
Okay, well, thank you for having me on, Mike. Basically, what you have is when utilities are pushing for wind power or solar power projects, they're pushing it for a reason, and the reason is this. They get a guaranteed return on their investment of about 10%. When you build out these wind power projects, they are immensely expensive. They're usually in the realm of a couple billion dollars. They get guaranteed profit of a couple hundred million dollars every time that they do this. So they work in concert with the so-called environmental groups to push these projects, even when you have perfectly fine coal or natural gas or nuclear power plants in place. They want to build out the new facilities to enhance their profits. So what's being proposed right now is an offshore wind power project off Virginia Beach, Virginia. And the problem is this. Well, there are many problems, but the biggest problem is that you have right whales. There's only 300, just over 300 of them left in the world. And that is key to their migration path. And right whales, when they die primarily because of collisions with ships or other entanglements with human activity. And by building out this proposed wind power project, you are almost certainly going to be directly killing many of the few whales that are left, because they're going to be colliding with ships. They're going to have their navigation disrupted by all the sound pollution going on undersea when they're pile driving the large turbines into the seabed, into the seafloor. You're going to have all sorts of problems that are basically going to doom this species. And if this were anything else, if this were a natural gas power plant, if this were mining for coal, if it were anything else that had to deal with conventional energy, environmental activists would not stand for this for a minute. The media would be in an uproar. The people perpetrating the project would be vilified beyond belief. But because we worship at the altar of carbon dioxide emissions and wind and solar power, there is barely a peep coming from anybody who self-identifies as an environmental activist as they drive this species to extinction.
James, I've just got a real quick follow-up question. I know Gabe has something here. When you say guaranteed profit on those, is that because of government subsidies and incentives or things like that? I mean, because I don't know that the wind power is that efficient just yet to deliver a guaranteed profit.
Right. So it's a return on the money they spend. So basically what you have throughout the country is most of the utilities, they are regulated by but also protected by. They have a monopoly set up and guaranteed and protected by the federal government, excuse me, not by the federal government, by the state governments. And the state government then says, okay, if you want to build a project, really if you want to have any type of very significant expenditure, you come to us, you get our approval. So you have the utilities that go to the state of Virginia, and they say, we'd like to build this. And with our monopoly, because you regulate how much we can charge people. The deal is the government gives them the monopoly, but then the government then signs off on what their costs and expenditures are. So they say, we'd like to do this. And look, we're going to reduce carbon dioxide emissions with this offshore wind power project. So the government regulators typically say, oh, carbon dioxide, well, that's far more important than anything else. Yes, you get to do this. So, yes, you want to build a $2 billion project. I'm throwing that number out there because that's typically what the cost is. It can vary. But you want to build a $2 billion project and make $200 million in guaranteed profit. We're all on board because you're reducing carbon dioxide.
Good morning, James. Gabe Pfeiffer here. One of the things that I've noticed, too, about the particularly the wind projects is their impact on birds. And I often wondered how the animal protection sort of side of the environmental movement has responded or does respond to the other impacts of these types of projects, that and as well as the solar farms and what they do to their local environment, their local wildlife. Do they ever say anything about these projects, or is it really just the complete opposite of what would happen, like you said, if it were a natural gas a pipeline or something like that?
Right. Great point. It's a double standard. So we know for a fact that wind turbines just in the United States kill literally millions of birds and bats each and every year, including many threatened and endangered species. And they get a free pass. There are no consequences. On the other hand, let's say that you were producing your drilling for oil or natural gas, and let's say that you had a retention pond where you keep some of the water that you've used in that, and if a bird happens to land in there and die, then you face enormous governmental consequences and penalties, whereas if you kill an endangered a bald eagle or some other a bird or endangered bat with your turbines, it's like, well, that's okay because we're reducing carbon dioxide emissions. It has turned on its head what the meaning of environmentalism is. Back when I was growing up as a child, environmentalism was saving open spaces. And by the way, it requires more than 400 square miles of wind turbines to produce the same amount of electricity as a single coal or natural gas power plant. When I was a child, environmentalism also meant, in addition to preserving open lands, preserving species. But now none of the self-identified environmental activists really care about that.
So the Environmental Protection Agency, which would usually be the enforcement arm for all of these regulations, they are literally just kind of flouting their own rules and probably the law, I think, to allow this to continue, right?
Well, they apply exemptions for wind and solar power. And again, these are exemptions that don't apply for anybody else. They give wind and solar power a free pass, and they pretend that these environmental consequences, these species deaths, simply do not occur. There have been conventional energy projects that have been delayed and canceled left and right in the western United States, for example, because of concerns about the sage grouse. There are thousands upon thousands upon thousands of sage grouse. And then environmental activists say, oh, but you're looking to engage in your activity in an area that sage grouse like to use, so therefore we can't do it. They're not even showing any deaths. They're just saying, well, it's habitat that they like to use. Whereas on the other hand, when you know that you're going to drive the right whale into extinction with this offshore wind project, well, they really don't care.
Hey, James, this is Ken. Real quick, has PETA or any of the Animal Welfare Institute or anybody stepped up to protest this thing? Because the right whale, if there are 300 left, they're not long for us.
Yeah, no, you hear nary a peep from PETA or any other self-identified environmental groups, including conservation groups, including wildlife groups. Again, they're worshiping at the altar of the renewable energy industrial complex, all in the name of the so-called climate crisis, which does not exist.
James, this is going to sound like a snarky question, and I really don't mean it to be. With the construction or the proposed construction of these in the ocean and obviously everything, ocean's a big place. Why don't the whales just swim somewhere else if they're spooked by the noise? I think a lot of people are asking it because I'm listening, and I'm sure you're right. I just don't understand why.
Yeah, they have set migration patterns, much like birds do. When there are large wind power projects, for example, in Altamont Pass in California and other places, the species don't simply say, all right, we'll divert and go around it. This is what their instinctive migration pattern is, and their hope is, their
They said they'll just go through it. They just don't know what's going on there, but that's what they do. So that's what you're going to see here. Plus, you're going to have all sorts of activity with ships that are going to be out there as far as setting up the turbines and collisions with ships. That's the biggest threat to right whales. So even before you get to the noise activity of pounding the turbines into the seafloor, you're still going to have collisions with ships, even if the whales were to understand what's going on, which they simply don't do.
Got it. Okay. All right. So the Heartland Institute and also the Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow is also involved in this as well. Where do we learn more online, James? Any websites, social media, anything like that?
Sure. You can learn more about the Heartland Institute at heartland.org, and you can certainly learn more about CFACT at CFACT.org.
We got the news roundup starting in just about 4 minutes here on News Talk STL, including we got a preview of what's coming up in the United States Supreme Court's term. That actually starts today with arguments on some of the cases that they've selected. So I've got some details on that for you right here on 101.9 and 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Okay, a lot going on in the world, including right here in St. Louis. Going to try to get to as much of it as we can. And you know what? This is just one of those days. I'm just going to say it throughout the day. Tell me what you're thinking. 314-912-1019. I know a lot of people enjoy hearing the conversations and the interviews and all that kind of stuff, but I'm just kind of in the mood to hear from everybody around St. Louis, whether you agree with me or not.
You really want to know what I'm thinking?
I do want to know. I do. And I want to know what everybody else is thinking, too. Just one of those days. I just want a lot of different voices today.
Okay.
Yeah. I didn't schedule a lot of interviews today just because I really want to hear from people. So hopefully that's what happens today. I don't know why. I'm just kind of in the mood for that.
Yeah, let's go for it.
550 right now. I'm Mike Ferguson. That's Ken Williams. All right, three things that I'm keeping an eye on. St. Louis is kind of, sort of, at least talking about possibly paying police officers more. I'll tell you about that here in just a little bit. Also, Ukraine has some success pushing Russia back in some areas, not all, but they've made some significant gains in reclaiming land in their own country in the last few days. And honoring Yadi and Albert, man, what a weekend at Busch Stadium.
Yeah.
Wow. I went to the game Saturday, and my friend Bob had an extra ticket, and he invited me to go, and we got there. He said, it's going to be sold out. We need to get there early. I'm all about it. So 6:15 game, I think we got there at 3:30, and it was packed around the stadium.
Yeah.
I had never seen anything like it. Adam Wainwright took a picture, put it up on his social media, you know, said, all the years I've been driving to work hours before a game, I've never seen it. And apparently people were there, you know, 5, 6, 7 hours, not because there's any benefit of getting there early. People just had to be around the stadium and around the vibe and the buzz. Man, it was cool. Man, it was so much fun.
I think that you can attribute a little bit of this to the good job that they've done down there with Ballpark Village and all of the other different things you can do in addition to just going to the stadium these days.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, there is. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, obviously I have some policy faults with the way they did Ballpark Village, but it's there now. And
yeah.
It's fun. I mean, I've eaten at the restaurants. But yeah, I think it was just, we knew this was something really special.
Yeah.
You know, with Yadier Molina, Albert Pujols, and it's not just about baseball. It really is something that the entire city, you know, can bond over, unite over.
And I saw the speech with Albert Pujols, and he's just a class act. He loves St. Louis.
We're going to hear parts of that here at about 6:05.
Okay.
Yep. Okay, so other huge news here. The Supreme Court's new term begins today.
Yeah.
Here we are again with a new justice on the bench. Fox News' Jessica Rosenthal has the update.
Today marks Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson's first term as a Supreme Court justice. The first case the court will consider has to do with whether the EPA has the authority to claim the Clean Water Act applies to an Idaho couple's plans for a piece of property the EPA says is technically wetlands. But there are other critical cases on the calendar, including two that could result in an end to affirmative action on public and private college campuses. Two other cases pertain to elections. One is a challenge to North Carolina's redistricting and whether gerrymandering violated the state state constitution. Another case out of Alabama alleges the redrawing of congressional districts violated the Voting Rights Act. Jessica Rosenthal, Fox News.
I don't usually report on just break-in crimes, property crimes, but this one really irritated me. Early Sunday morning, there was a break-in at the historic Scott Joplin House on Del Mar. Major damage reported. There were witnesses and Missouri State Parks reps who say that by the time somebody called the police and somebody got there, there was somebody throwing things out of a second story window in the home. They don't know exactly how much the damage is, but it includes things like musical instruments, archives, artifacts, over 100 years old for Scott Joplin, who was such a huge influence in America's jazz culture. So that just ticks me off like you would not believe.
What's the point?
Yeah. So we'll know more in the coming days, maybe weeks, how much damage was actually done. And the thing is, you can have all the insurance you want on that. It doesn't replace the actual items as well. All right, we're going to talk about this more at 6:20. A resolution is going to be discussed on Wednesday at the St. Louis City Board of Aldermen that would increase the pay for St. Louis City police officers, metropolitan police officers. We don't know how much it would be, but there's a resolution that's been submitted that they'll talk about that. If they approve it, then they say, okay, now we're going to look for ways to pay the police officers more.
They need to be very careful, and we'll mention this later, but I heard from someone that they're in record numbers leaving. The police force.
And I have those numbers.
Okay.
Yeah, 6:20. We will talk about that. And it's getting, we know how violent St. Louis is, particularly some of the districts. We know the crime rate. We know it's bad. And a lot of it has to do with pay. A lot of it simply has to do with how the police know that City Hall looks at them.
Yeah.
And how it treats them. And this is beyond the ideology. When we talk about, you know, leftism, it's not just because we're on the right and they're on the left. These are the real world effects when you have fringe extremists running your government, is that things like this happen. So once again, we are going to have more on that at 6:20. And there's a lot to cover there as well. All right. Recovery efforts underway in Florida after Hurricane Ian has moved on. On Meet the Press, moderator Chuck Todd was talking to U.S. Senator Rick Scott. And Rick Scott was talking about recovery efforts that are underway right now.
So people are working hard. They're trying to get the power back on, make sure your phones work. But the biggest thing right now is just continuing to make sure we find everybody, and anybody that needs help, they get to the hospital, get whatever care they need.
We've got dozens of storm-related deaths have already been confirmed in Florida following Hurricane Ian. President Biden is expected to visit Florida this Wednesday. Hopefully the media learned their lesson after getting beeslapped by Governor DeSantis when they tried to make it all political right away. There's plenty of time for that later.
No, they're still trying.
Yeah, I think it'll come back is what I think they're going to do. DeSantis and the White House are coordinating, and they're on the same page right now. All right, just ahead, Yachty and Waino and Albert, what a great weekend.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.